For the first time in a year, the first time in 51, the second and fourth, that's strong.
Could be highly inflationary for the
fence and grease, because all of the meat would be that you were wishing the dollar, you were raising a tax on imports, you're building a wall here. And so all of American domestic industry raises prices up to that wall that weren't already there. So the way these price freeze and the import surcharge and the action in the international front had to come together. One without the other would have been a great error. The other point I wish to mention is that it is vitally important for us to recognize that, we are not here trying to build a wall around the United States. There have been unfair exchange rates around the world, and we're changing that. We have a great ability to take the risks of fighting. There have been also instances where American commodities, are at a disadvantage with some commodities produced abroad. Primarily due to exchange rates, also perhaps for other reasons. But if the net result of our actions were simply to, again, build a wall around the United States, raise all our territory, but then not do anything about making the United States more competitive, this would be the worst thing that could happen to this country. That we must do. Now let me explain how that has evolved. We've got a view here from agriculture space. One of the things that's terribly important here is that, as you know, the best thing that's happening in American agriculture are huge agricultural exports. Those exports can be knocked off or sharply reduced in the event that our competitors in the world who are selling things to us feel that we're being unfair and that we're not going to let them sell things to us and they're not going to buy from us and take the one that they should get. So it would not be in the interest of the United States. Another way it's not in our interest is that the United States, if we do not, if American industry, for example, does not take the steps to renew its plan, commission modern, so that it can be competitive. If American labor does not take the steps working with industry to increase its productivity, it simply means that the United States, as far as steel is concerned, as far as automobile is concerned, as far as aircraft is concerned, as far as virtually every major product will slip behind and go second position. That will mean that we will have to build walls higher and higher around the world. So that is why the third part of the package comes in. It would not make sense to raise the wall around the United States to make it more difficult for foreign products to come in here. It would not make sense to take moves that will change exchange rates, which will in effect increase the making our products more competitive. Unless we went to the heart of our own problem, and the heart of our own problem is for American industry and American labor to do take the steps that will make it more competitive for the world. That is why we believe that the investment tax credit, that's why we believe that the action on the automobile excise tax, which in a sense relates to this, because it will, as they sell more, then they become more efficient. That's why we believe that the new initiatives that we will be presenting in January, which we'll discuss with the Commission in advance again, in this respect, are so important. This is a time, in other words, for the United States. Since me and all of us, it is a time for us to take the necessary action to stop the wage price escalation. Because that's important for an American economy. It's time for us to take the necessary action to see that American business and labor do not suffer an unfair advantage in competing with products abroad, and we've done that. Also, that we take necessary action to provide the tax and other incentives for our industry, our business, to become more competitive in the world. Now, the last part of this, of course, is one of the hardest, and that is the business of cutting some expenditures so that we can, so that as we reduce taxes, we will also not increase the deficit. We have done that. as far as the expenditure cuts are concerned, there are choices going to need to, like you said, when we postpone revenue sharing for 3 months, when we postpone the farm for a year, we are simply recognizing where the economy's having meters going to get through at this point in time to be implemented in that period of time. The other change is the 10% cut for economic giving, postponing the government pay increase, freezing government employment by reducing it by 5%. These are matters which we are doing administratively, and which we will therefore take responsibility. Now, the final point is this. There's some things we can do administratively, which we, those actions we have taken. The import tax or import surcharge, the way the more properly be described, can be raised by the president unilaterally under the GATT. We have done. As far as the wage price freeze, the Congress has given the president the authority to do that by himself. We have done that, and we have to administer. On the other hand, in the areas of the investment tax credit, in the areas of the acceleration of the personal exemption, which will be helpful in producing more jobs, and removing automobile tax, we need the cooperation of Congress. We, of course, will have to take budget actions, but we will need the cooperation of the Congress in supporting us in those budget actions to the extent that the Congress agrees with. That's the overview, as I see it. I would emphasize that we had a very strong team working on this. Everybody is together on it. There was vigorous argument debate over the months of when to act, what to do, how much to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this represents the best thinking of all the people, and mentioning these four. I'm only mentioning them because they are the quadrant, which of course is the top economic advisors. We trust the Secretary of the Treasury, of course, who took the leadership position. Dr. Arthur Burns, Federal Reserve, Paul McCracken, and George Shultz. Those are their teams were the ones responsible for this, pieces of this, and pulling it together. With that introduction, I'd like to go to John Connolly, who will go to any specifics you would like. So, item by item, where the Congress has a responsibility.
Mr. President, I think in general, I'd like to reemphasize one point that you made. The item of the background of the development of this whole program, it seems to emphasize too strongly the necessity for concerted and coordinated action. And to begin with, the Congress can and will consider it. In order to put the measure Congress has to pass on into effect, because much of our international negotiations and the results of those negotiations, I think, is going to depend on what we do here at home. Whether or not nations, the leaders of nations around the world, are convinced that we really are committed to setting our own house in order as far as economic stability and leadership is concerned. So I think to that extent, we currently need the cooperation and the speedy cooperation of everyone in the Congress to try to implement this program. I won't take any more time except to emphasize and detail the tax measures. Mr. Chairman, no secret about them, but there's nothing new about them. The excise tax, as you know so well, it's history of it much better than I. It's been on the books since 1917. It's been up and down. The repeal of it means about approximately $200 per car hire next year. It's just a direct excise tax, one of the few left on the books, and there's really no justification for it, in my judgment, from the standpoint of equity, except it raises a lot of money, and it does. But in the light of this overall action, the budget cuts that the president's putting into effect, that it seems that now is appropriate time to repeal this excise tax. I support it for another reason. And this is something in the long range that disturbs many of you, I know, because I've talked to you about it. The automotive industry is a very basic industrial manufacturing industry in the state. And I suspect if we didn't have to have cars, that we have to have this capacity in behalf of the state. You have to have this kind of capacity, if for no other reason than potential contributions to defense and emergency. You cannot, in a nation of this size, with the role and the scope that we play in world leadership, have a nation that doesn't have this capacity to manufacture.
John, that's actually the point you made just in the meeting. One out of every six jobs in the United States, directly or indirectly, comes from the automobile industry.
So when we do something here, I think it's important that all you all know, and I think it's important for frankly the bipartisan approach that members of Congress say that this is not something for the automotive industry. The critics in the press conference yesterday, some of the reporters tried to make it look like we're doing something for the automotive industry. Well, indirectly, you're going to create more jobs in the automotive industry. If that's doing something for them, that's doing something for them. But the repeal of this excise tax is going to be passed through to every consumer who buys a car next year.
John, if you would, if you could inform the leaders in the conversations that you had after you and I chatted, you inform the practice of four major companies. And if I understand, they've all admitted that they're going to do that. Is that correct?
No question about it. They have it in writing. My person knows much more about it than I do.
They put that in writing. That's correct.
Also, would you tell them, would you mind passing on to the leaders your conversation with Jim Roach? Jim Roach called back yesterday afternoon and said that before we do it, he said, I want to tell you, and I hope you will inform the president accordingly, that we have labored all day, we've considered all day, and after the praise of the president's courageous statement and manifestation of his leadership last evening, he said, we're going to suspend the 1972 pricing. I want to read you the announcement that we proposed to put out in just a few moments and said we're going to, during the extent of the period of the freeze, we're going to hold the 1971 prices even on the 1972 model.
That's a very good joke. So
that we will study it during the period of the freeze and see what we can do there. But said we don't know. We think this is going to have an enormous impact on us. He said we think that the repeal of the excise tax alone will increase the sale of automobiles by between 5% and 10%. He said, I say the 5% minimum. He said, I don't even, without getting any credit, the 10% import surcharge, without the 10% drop of off the credit, without considering those. Just the repeal of the excise tax alone, we think will increase the sale of cars 5% to 10%. Well, if it's 5% this year, they'll sell over 8 million. That's 400,000 cars, that's 100,000 jobs, because they compute that for every 100,000 automobiles that are sold, you create 25,000 jobs. And if we can increase the sale of 400,000 to 500,000, you take a full of 10%, an increase in the domestic car sales next year, that's 800,000. That's 200,000 new jobs that would be created in their estimation by the repeal of excise tax alone. Now that's how important it is. And these are not menial jobs. These are not make-work jobs. These are jobs in a basic industry that pay one of the highest wages in the American economy. So this is how important it is that we move on these areas.
I should emphasize to the important point, George Robinson, just off your term of words. The auto industry, that's 200,000 jobs. The ripple effect is great. Ripple out. How many more? Who knows? And everything else. Tire.
On personal exemptions, Chairman Mills, you know, of course, as a game much better than I, the President has recommended the approval of more than $50 exemption schedule for 73 and 72, and it'll cost about approximately $1 billion. We figured $900 million precisely. We rounded it to $1 billion. That means, if I recall the figures next year, in the light of the reductions that you've already given, the tax exemptions and rebates. If I can use that word, it's going to affect in January is $4.9 billion, I believe, back to the individual, the decreases in taxes that come into effect in January 72. That includes the moving forward of $50 exemption from 73 to 72. One other proposal will come up to the Chairman Mills that we haven't talked about either the president's speech or the press conference is the is a modified DIS proposal with which you're also very familiar that the president submitted last year. It has been reworked. It'll be coming up very shortly. The other item of particular significance is what the president calls job development credit or the accelerated investment tax credit. The proposal being that beginning August 15th for 1 year, Chairman Long, that you have a 10% investment tax credit, dropping a year from now, August 15th, 1972, dropping to 5%, leaving it 5% on a permanent basis. Now, this creates an administrative problem as far as beyond any question, but because anytime you either stop or decrease one of these taxes of this kind, it's difficult to administer, but the president felt, as everybody said, that in the light of the overall program which he submitted, that what we need to do is to revitalize this American economy and do it now. And this means massive insertions of new capital into the system. And the machine tool industry has been particularly low. They've been in fact years since the Dominic Machine Tools, Illinois, they've got used to Michigan. So, frankly, much of this is directed toward the solution of current immediate problems, but a great deal of it has far-reaching implications. And I'll make one statement again for repetitive purposes, which you all know but as well or better than I. Over the past 25 years, we've rebuilt the facilitated and restored nations around the world where their productive capacity is in many cases superior to our own. And this is currently true in the face of this industry, such as building automobile manufacturing and so forth. Now, part of the thrust, this whole program, is not what's going to happen in the next month or the next 6 months or the next year. Part of it, we hope, has an impact through this entire decade. Simply because we have to encourage the reinvestment, both the savings in this country and stimulation from profits back into rebuilding and restoring and restructuring the industrial capacity of this nation. If you don't do it, there's no way that we can solve the international monetary problem. For the simple reason that Japan now would say has an average work week good pay scale of approximately 75 cents an hour. Ours on a comparable basis, as I recall, the figures about $2.25. Those may not be the precise figures, but it's in that relative range. But now, and that's true all over the world. The wage scale is so much lower than ours, so our efficiency has to be greater, our productivity per man hour has to be greater. That depends on the basic facilities and plant equipment that exists in this country. Otherwise, there's no way we're going to protect the standard of living in this country. It's just that fundamental, just that simple. So that is one of the moving forces behind the submission of this entire program. And Mr. President, I believe that covers the full law in that area. Quite interesting to note that I stand corrected by industry representatives who would make exceptions. But let's take John, a field you're interested in the field of national defense. It's interesting to note that the Navy, for example, looking at the Navy, they're looking at the Navy budget very strongly. And Alan Mules, all the rest of us, going on the rest of the Navy. The problem with the American Navy today is that our Navy is an old Navy. The Russian Navy is much smaller. We have an enormous advantage, but their cruisers are newer. They don't have the aircraft carriers, their cruisers and everything else. They still are up to us in submarines, but they've got cruisers that are better than any that we've got, except for one or two or whatever it is. Now, why did this happen? Because at the end of World War II, we had this enormous advantage. We had this huge Navy. They didn't have any, so
something for us to go run off the hills about, but it's just something to recognize. Now, in this other field, during the World War II, the United States produced half the steel in the world. Today, you produce 25% of the steel. In the World War II, there was no competition for U.S. automobiles any place in the world. We sold virtually all of them. Today, the most modern steel plant in the world is not in the United States. It's in probably Germany or Japan or both. The most modern automobile plant is probably Germany, Japan, or both. We still got some very good ones. And you just go on down the line. This is nothing to cry about, nothing to whine about. That's good. I mean we just sit here all fast, and the rest, that means that we're not going to make progress, and to have this competition goes us on. But what we need to do is to stimulate American industry to buy the new machine tools, to develop the new techniques and the new ways of doing business, so that our industry can be more efficient than theirs, because our wage scales are higher. And this is where the investment tax credit, or the job, or the development act, or whatever you want to call it, I got one other before we go on to the other, and let me speak quite candidly. We do not claim in this administration, and I want the chairman, Chairman Mills, and Russell Long to understand it. We don't claim that this is something that in this tax field that was just our idea. Both of you that advocated this, we also realize that this is a place where we have to have the Democratic leadership and the House, the Democratic leadership and the Senate, particularly the committee leadership, along with Republicans to get it through. As far as so-called credit is concerned, let me make it clear that while we're interested in getting it done, I emphasize again, we can do all the things the president can do here, and this can fall. Unless the Congress comes along, and he's very hilarious, because it's one as a whole package of work, we think. At least this is Arthur's view, George's view, and Paul McCracken's, the people that look at this from their high pedestals of economic wisdom. But if any one part of the package comes out, the rest of it comes out intact. At least this is our view. So
in the investment tax credit area, you're not going to change the ADR.
No, that will not be changed. That's correct. It will not be changed.
Well, Mr. President, I suppose that much of what you're proposing can be done administratively. You will understand that you're not going to take any action on any part of this unless Congress acts to perform this part. We said here at the beginning that we had to have one package. Now, if you can do part of what you proposed administratively, I'm just wondering if you can hold back on that until Congress acts, since it's necessary to say to have it all in the package.
What we have done is we have acted in all the areas that the president can act effectively on Sunday night. Such as we have asked the Congress to act retroactive to Sunday night. But it was very important, Alan, to move Sunday night on the waiting price freeze. It was important then to move to protect the dollar, or we wouldn't have had a dollar protected about 2 weeks, right? That's correct. That is our opinion. So you see, we have moved, and that is why I'm glad you raised this point, because it is terribly important to Wither and Russell and Johnny. It's very important that the tax action be retroactive and that business know it now. It's got to be retroactive the same day because it's just beginning the same day.
Mr. President, there is one point. Your Secretary of Treasury and I have an understanding that whatever we talked in terms of the investment tax credit being restored is later in the year, that we would speak in terms of its application of purchases on and after April 1. Is that, John, what do you think? And we would let the vote?
Probably so. I don't know how long our statement carried into the future.
Well, it's a commitment by both of us.
I thought about that.
You may want to think a little further about that. We may
it out, I guess.
Well, I know it's something you and I are going to have to talk about.
Well, the important thing, though, here is now, and here's the other side of this thing. You know, you get to this whole business, the investment tax credit, and they said, well, now, there's a 4-year lead time on this stuff. Why can't 10% apply to the 4-year lead time thing? And here, there's got to be a tough decision made. If you do that, you're not going to give the to the economy at the time that we need it, which is now.
And that's part of the book. I think there's an answer to it.
And not that I'm going to go up way off the hook, but you go up with it, I'll stay with you.
All right. That's a practical matter of what we're doing.
Administratively, we're getting to them when they put it into service. That means they ordered it 6 months ago. They're still going to get it.
We make it apply
as time goes into service. Now, this doesn't mean that every piece of equipment bought in April will necessarily get it, but the vast majority of it will, and all our big items, all the long lead items, will get it.
We got some problems with that.
Okay. Now, the guy at the tank is full on, and I think everybody was in good faith to play that part. But we deal with just about everything that was in our revenue code calculated to encourage somebody to do something. I don't care whether he was a real estate man building an office building or a man building a plant, but by the time we got through anything in the tank, we would encourage somebody. If that's just money we used, by the time we got through that, would have people and everything in there, by the way. I didn't just suppose to get cooperating or something, terminally. It was all taken out. So by the time we got through, as far as the business was concerned, that tax reform, this is one great big dose of that installed. That's all that was in there for that.
And who let you take it?
Well, the boy Flint, I still catch the hell out of it. There's one single thing in there that's going to fit this. But I think it is fair that this goes along to sort of, there ought to be some review of what all has been done with these and other segments of the economy. For example, we may clock the real estate people pretty good with that bill. And if maybe they're in town, they share some of the speeches, then it would be put in there for new investments into the job so the homeowner can participate in. Now, there's not one big, as of now, the biggest windfall in this program is in interest rates. When you've got 6% inflation a year, you can justify 12 or 14% interest rates. Because after it rolls to the capital, it falls in that maybe 6% or 8%. But if we're going to stabilize prices, my apologies for your efforts to do this. I think it's only fair that these, something ought to be done about these interest rates up to 10%.
Let me address myself in the first subject, and then I want the interest rate thing directly answered by John and by Arthur Burns, because this is one that's matter of fact. We were a little bit late. We were going over this morning. I raised it with John Conway. And we were just like you on it. Regarding the first part of the subject, and I want to speak quite bluntly. Russell, if we get this tax request down there, this very simple one for these three things, and then if we decide to go through long, tortured hearings and explore debate and make it a Christmas tree with a minor tax reform, believe me, we could kill this whole thing. Now, let me tell you what we will do, however, you may have missed one paragraph I had in my talk, where I said that in January, that I am proposing now, and I directed the Secretary of the Treasury to work out in consultation with the members of the committee, new proposals for the long-range development of this economy and so forth. But there are, I think, frankly, there is no tax bill that does not have inequities in it. I think there are inequities in the present one. I think there's more that can be done in the field of stimulating job creation in this country that's simply the investment tax credit and the repeal of the excise tax and more purchasing power for the consumers. I agree with that. But what I fear is here. And here we've got a different situation. Actually, you in the Senate and Mike have got a very different situation from the people in the House. The House naturally will not have a proposed removal. And what I fear, Russell, is that if the thing then got in, and then you've got to do a business of trying to, well, we have this, you've got to do something for this, you've got to do something for that. You either could balloon it up, or it would become basically a fancy tax reform, which we're really not prepared to act on at this time. I can't emphasize too strongly the need for fast, surgical action at this point. That's why we picked out these three, where frankly we didn't think there's too much disagreement. I think most people think the investment tax credit, in one form or another, we think this is the best form because of the particular advantage of 10% versus 5. It's a good move. Wilbur suggested it, you suggested another set. Second, I think most people believe that the automobile excise tax should be repealed, some don't, but if they hear the argument, they will. And third, I don't think anybody's going to object to accelerating the personal income tax deduction by 1 year. I get into these other fields, we don't have the unanimity of support, and I just see it dragging on. That's really my
goal. Well, I just think so, Mr. President, if we said, all right, now, with regard to these banks and insurance companies, any interest income that they have, the excess they can spend on their overall investment, so it's taxed at 100%. But they're getting a lot more than that. They just wish to go through their loans and get that back to their lenders. But I'm sure that your people were just as seems to me in this case. And where it ended from is on the outstanding loans is an enormous advantage on those who have the loans outstanding. These people were on rising interest rates. And then calling on their borrowers and their customers and requesting the right to raise interest rates. And they've got it down now to where it falls. They're able to do this to counterpart and reduce interest rates, even though the loan would carry a higher interest rate over a period of time. But I would certainly hope that there was a part of it that was going to get interest rates down and make money available to people on buy homes and things.
Russell, that's what happened yesterday. That's what we hope will happen. Interest rates in every form came down yesterday because of these actions. Now, if he froze the interest rates the last 9 days, frankly, you got a hell of a high interest rate group to worry about. What the president could, under the Credit Control Act, instruct the Fed to install a credit interest rate control. But and we talked about it, no one wants to let the lending institutions out, but we felt that what we probably would do if we did that was to make us tighten up their money. They don't have to make loans, they just sit there, and if they don't like a loan or if they don't like the collateral, that there's so many intangibles in a loan, as you well know, that you can't effectively control it, and you certainly can't do it for 9 days. So what we hope is going to happen, it happened on yesterday. The 30, 90-day bills were the interest on them was down. The six-month bills, the 5 to 7 year notes, the long-term notes were down from 8.8 to 7.90. They had a very substantial drop yesterday. They're down again this morning. Now, and we're going to write a letter to Dr. Burns and I. I'm going to do some more talking about it at the president's request. We're going to write a letter to the ABA. I said in the press account yesterday that we expect these lending institutions to hold these interest rates down. They don't want the president can't move against them, but it's a question of how you do it. It's a question of whether or not you can effectively do it. That's the only decision, Russell, that we have. And we just felt that we were better off doing it this way than any others.
Well, you've got a public private debt structure. The last time I looked at it, was about $1.7 trillion. And if that's built on the assumption that you're going to have 6% inflation, and then we're not going to have 6%, we're only going to have 2 or 3%, got an entity rate. That's a just old man of $68 billion bonus that somebody's getting. It seems to me that just the rank and file of people in the country, if they're going to make a sacrifice like it later, make that sacrifice, give up that pay rate just to go along with this, which I'm for, then I'd like to see us try to do something about the other part of it too. I mean, bankers ought to be willing to make some small sacrifice along with everybody else, I would hope.
President, can I ask the excises on automobiles go into the highway trust fund?
No.
Don't they?
No, trucks would not be automobiles.
I agree.
I agree with that.
doesn't affect the integrity of the...
Under a credit or your recommendation, that effectively affects that cycle trucks is where it ought to be.
Mr. President, I'd like to, I think for the purpose of this discussion, we could go a little bit further in this one package deal. I wonder if somebody on the team would tell us how much of your program can be done by you without any action by Congress. Now, for instance, the 7% surcharge, 10% surcharge you're talking about, can you put that into effect immediately?
Yes.
And you will.
And
now, what's your part of that?
The trade expansion there in 1962.
Okay. Well, now, of course, there is fights and ways that
got over.
Now, what is it that the Congress must do in order to make this tax whole as they should be?
Well, what we have to have from the Congress's action, the tax front, the President cannot reduce the excise tax, he cannot reduce foreign investment tax credit, he cannot accelerate personal income tax, so we need action on the tax front from the Congress.
Now,
that's the important thing we need.
Now, what effect will this 10% surtax charge have on the sale by the farmers of that of agriculture products? Because if you remember, when that was spoken of in the past, all talked about retaliation. And we had in Japan, for instance, as I understand, we sell them over $1 billion, $1.1 billion. And we've been in this soybean business now, selling to Europe over $500 million a year. And I'm just wondering that if you impose at the moment this 10% surcharge, what effect will that have on them retaliating and giving us some kind of a tax and thereby cut off the thing is a lot of farm products.
Sir, we just
the article stated last year, this year I think, that he was looking forward to an expansion of our foreign in our farm markets of agriculture products to consume about $7.8 billion, I think. Now if we put that surtax on, what effect will that have on the sale of those farms?
Sir, we don't think our agricultural sales are largely to the European community. We don't think there's going to be any retaliation there because there's no part of the world that has more restrictions imposed by governments than the European countries against the importation of American agricultural commodities. They demolish their agriculture. We're going to run a $3 billion trade deficit with Japan this year. How can they retaliate? The thing is hurting us more than anything else in the ship strikes, the dock strikes now on the West Coast, getting agricultural products there, not selling them. We don't think it's going to be any retaliation from any of those countries that will hurt agricultural products.
Well, I tell you, I hope that we can be convinced of that.
Well, sir,
every time you talk about increasing tariffs or surcharges, as we're now proposing, on agricultural products, they've talked about getting back, and that's been the story that has kept us from imposing a lot of these taxes. You know,
well, we would have to wait to see with that. No indication that it's going to be any retaliation at all.
You wait until 60 days to see what's going to happen.
The fact,
I hope that doesn't happen. The facts are, that's one thing that bothers me. Because I've been on agriculture, you know, 34 years, now 36 years. And I'm very, very anxious to see that any program you take here will not adversely affect agriculture.
But, Senator, may I interrupt you just a second? The President's action in imposing this 10% surcharge on across the board on all our inputs is in keeping with provisions of the GATT, which allow a country to do this when it has problems in its balance of payments. They cannot complain about action that we take, which the GATT itself said we can take. Now, what they were going to complain about was the bill that passed out last year with Bush.
Sir, we also want to make
Let me also call out to you that this 10% import surcharge does not apply to most important commodities in the agricultural world, because it does not apply, first, to the non-duty line. Second, it doesn't apply to those items that come into the United States under quantitative quota.
Now, this is sugar, doesn't apply to sugar, doesn't apply to meat, doesn't apply to fish, doesn't apply to oil, doesn't apply to petroleum products,
doesn't apply to coal,
doesn't apply to coffee, doesn't apply to any of those things. So there's no reason in the world why any country, under the GATT rules or the facts that exist here, why they should impose things that would retaliate against us.
Well, I hope you're right. Right.
Well, if they do, they violate GATT.
They have to violate GATT.
But now, could I just make one other point here that does concern me about the program? If you have a quota, and under GATT, I think in our situation, we have to come back and vote for it. We have to vote for parents. We have to make that choice. I think we do the way, and all vote. Now, if you have a quota, I never give a chance. They're not going to buy our soil. You said it's kind of nice coming up here for a long time. You said one sample. With that would be quota, you said, well, that's what you're going to do. Rather buy so many automobiles from Europe, and that will just bring more in from Japan. But you don't have that kind of leverage under with a tariff. That's too small a thing. And you don't have the leverage to tell them, well, here, if you'll buy cotton and our soybeans and our corn and our wheat, we'll buy more of a bigger, bigger quarter for automobiles and a bigger quarter for electronics and things of that sort. I was rather hoping that there'd be more use of a quarter just because it does give you that leverage when they start retaliating as the Europeans have been threatening to even the Japanese don't. You well know, we ran under the GATT rules and voted for it. Now, it wasn't done for some reason that we thought first felt that the imposition of the tax would be a better way to do it, and it has to be applied without discrimination with regard to countries to not violate the GATT rules. Now, if you start applying quotas against one country, you violate the GATT rules, and then you're subject to retaliation, and you're subject to actually remission, as you know, of money. But that was the reason for it. We were very hopeful that it won't result in retaliation. I personally don't think it will. And in any event, we put ourselves at a tremendous disadvantage if we start applying quotas against one country as against another country.
And
that's an indefensible position.
Can I ask one question? You think it doesn't apply to any, I think it would for live cattle from Mexico and Canada,
not for breeding purposes, though, sir.
Well, you import a lot for a breeder purpose. Probably wouldn't know the prices when it wouldn't, but the prices would be. But I understand that we import a lot of cattle from Mexico and Canada, live cattle for feeding.
For processing, I understood that agricultural products either in being or in processing would not be covered. That's it.
It covers unprocessed agricultural products.
I would define the fish as unprocessed. And I would exclude that.
I just can't be certain because the council had.
George, you have to leave the
room. I think he's right.
So,
when we have not discussed this, it's
probable that it is not discussed.
Yeah, and we're importing off that all Mexico can send us all the devil right throughout. I think it did not apply in our identifying.
We can do it for you. Well, I hope you do that, Mr. President, so that we can have the facts on it.
Mr. President, may I say that I share much of all the concerns about the interest rates not being included. In addition to wage, price, and rent controls, I'm encouraged by what John Connolly has said about Washington does voluntarily. I realize the danger of trying to impose controls on interest rates and what might have happened had you followed the previous higher figure, which has since been reduced twice in 2 days. I don't really know what to say about it, because what I'd like to see would be something all the way across the board, including profits, such as they may be,
including some of these large bonuses, which many of these corporation people receive. What will be the...
They won't get those. They won't get the bonuses.
The bonuses will be possibly mitigated in your recovery salaries.
Yeah.
In your spur broadcast yesterday, you indicated that there was a good deal in the way of less profits, and that, in your opinion, nothing could be done in that area.
Well, as part of the matter, a certain man deal, we felt that the profits are the good, and we have to put certain criteria against which you determine what profits should be. Obviously, limits seems to me, you control the profits for a 30-day period. You have no way of determining what the profits were in a 30-day period. So you have to go back over a period of years, and again, you have to analyze other companies' books in the country, and on a 90-day basis, we just felt like it couldn't be done as a practical matter, as an equitable matter. That the profits of corporations generally in the country have not been such to cause any great concerns. Matter of fact, the last couple of years, profits have been down, and that's why our revenue has been down in the treasury.
So what I want to tell you is an explanation. So I want the explanation to raise. I don't know how to answer.
I understand. I wonder if there's any answers that I say with regard to President called on corporations not to increase their dividends. We told companies not to make it.
We cannot do that. We did not force it.
Under the law, he didn't have the authority to increase dividends.
Why expect cooperation for us at that?
Dr. Franklin had points that under the law, we don't require the law to increase funds.
On that point, Mr. President, I think might be said that with crisis growth, and in effect with most elements in the cost structure frozen, you have pretty well frozen profit margins. Now they will vary when volume varies, but the margin has been taken care of by these other factors.
Well, Mr. Secretary, is there possible danger that if you set a ceiling on interest rates, that the ceiling will have a tendency to come forward?
No question.
Then you're probably better off letting that interest rate be where you think you're open up. I think you might anticipate that down the price.
Let me say that, just so that you have no questions on this, I'm not among those that measures any more than anybody else in our society or a class of folks that are only concerned about the budget for the country and all that sort of thing. But also bankers have done damn well over the past 2 or 3 years. Now, that is why I think it's appropriate and we are to urge that bankers, along with corporations, follow the spirit of this with regard to interest rates. We can do that. If you get into the business, of the freeze on interest rates, look, let's put it this way. Let's put it in the politics. If you can be insured if knowing how popular it is to really freeze interest rates, that we just freeze them right there from a political standpoint. We examine the thing. We came to the conclusion that first it would probably freeze them at a higher level. The banks would all get the top level, figuring, well, maybe they're going to bring it down in a second. We thought that if we moved it in a second, it might be counterproductive because banks, it's the way you're going to increase my interest rates. And the banker, it was his cold eye, didn't make the loan. And if he didn't make the loan, then you stifle the business. Take, for example, in the field of housing. We all know that. We have a recent decision where we held a 7% on the now that 7% of charges is perhaps an unrealistic figure. We have to subsidize. What's wrong with just saying 7% and making it? All right, you hold that at 7%, and what's going to happen? The lending institutions simply aren't going to loan for houses. You know that happens, John. That is why you have to let those interest rates. They have to be at the market. But on the other hand, we certainly are going to call upon banks to serve this. And Arthur, would you address your thought on this point? Because I think you have had some conversations and maybe you can be helpful on it. Anything we do here would have to be done through the Fed. Believe me, we went over this with David today, Arthur.
Well, I think that fundamental point is, under law, according to it,
inflation premium has been built into the interest rate in recent times. Every lender knows the money has been depreciating in value. And if you charge 8% interest and the price level goes up 5%, what you're really getting is 3%. Now, the action that President took on increasing prices and wages for a 90-day period indicating the curve, so to say, he worked out during that period. After the 90-day interval is over, this action was designed to curb inflationary fears and expectations. And therefore, as far as the interest rate is concerned, to take the inflation premium out of the interest rate. Now, it worked beautifully yesterday, you see. Markets responded just the way we thought they would. And interest rates, instead of being frozen, came down, you see. I want to point out, that's the fundamental point. Unless you curb inflation, you are releasing a very powerful force that will bring interest rates down. Now, I want to make another point about interest rates. See, let's not lose sight of this. As far as our financial institutions are concerned, we have a very competitive market. And during the past year, when every price was going up practically speaking, and every wage was going up practically speaking, interest rates came down. The prime rate came down from 8.5% to 5.25%. More recently, the prime rate rose from 5.25% to 6%, in spite of the fact that we at the Federal Reserve have been pouring out money. And interest rates rose because of these inflationary fears and expectations. Now, that is something that the freeze, the price of wage freeze, designed, you see, to put an end to it. So I think that the action taken has already released some very powerful forces that will tend to bring interest rates down. Now, of course, you have many influences working on money capital markets, but this one major factor is not under control. Now, I want to say one thing more. Countries that have tried interest rate ceilings have discovered that bankers, all of a sudden, stop doing banking and they become money brokers. Is it? No longer lend. As such, on your own account, they're simply intermediaries. Now, that would not, I think we could think, if you are economy. Now, there is one area where I do have an open mind. Well, I haven't opened the mind on the whole thing, but I think we might want to do something later on, and that is in the field of consumer loans. Yeah, now that is a possibility. There, a ceiling might work. Now, this is
something we had that at the end of our work.
I started some contingency planning on that, but it was great for that. Well, these market rates of interest? Well, for the present, I think let's leave it alone. Markets are doing much better for us than we in the executive or in the Congress can do. Markets are bringing down interest.
Well, Mr. Burns, would it be practical? Not to freeze the interest rate, but set to impose a larger income tax on money made over and above a certain rate charge. Wouldn't that be some way to do it? Because if you don't to do something in that regard, you may have trouble in passing other legislation.
I think that is a possibility. Senator Long mentioned it. That's a possibility that I would want to praise.
I think that ought to be considered because
So, well, the one thing that is upset us about the investment tax credit, and that was repeated when it was repealed on both occasions, and I helped in Canada, thought, put it into effect when it came along, at least when the whole thing came up. But it tended to cause up all the credit. Well, if you bring it up, that's a son of a fellow wants to build a home, he can't get credit. If he does, he doesn't pay far too high interest rate, and that takes 20% down, that kind of thing. And I would hope that part of this program is going to be possible for a fellow to build himself a home and finance it on reasonable terms. That would be one of the business end of the agenda things we worked out.
All right, so that's a good example of what happened. By our efforts to help the consumer lending, so we passed legislation which put a ceiling of 18% on the loans, and thousands of businesses that never charged any interest are now getting 18%, and others who are getting 10, 12, 13 are now getting 18%, and the consumer has taken it on the chin. Because of that, we put a ceiling that became a floor. And the same thing would happen, I believe, in any other area. Well, you got a great example to watch, right?
Mr. President, what are we going to do, or how are we going to handle the military pay? And
George, well, that's one of the great problems that we'll have to wrestle with. And I think that we want to have an orderly discussion of that at the Cost of Living Council. There are a great many pay increase, price increase type questions, and I think, as the Secretary indicated in his press conference, it's best to sort of look at those carefully in terms of all the other things you're doing and not to jump in and answer.
But while you're on the subject of cutting back here and there, what other fields do you expect to freeze? Because I've been complaining, as you know, about public works. That's most important to all of us. God knows, God really has to our transportation system, except for the fact that we've made more work for us by providing navigation from Clarion up to Tulsa, Oklahoma, way up to Missouri, on the edge to Rome, Georgia, on the Tom Big Blue, we're working on all that. Mr. Bradford made a wonderful speech there, advocating that, but yet you're finishing all that. Now, I'd like to know what you're going to do now.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's important to you. I think all of it. Not because it's because it's necessary. Because if your railroads are going broke and running down, they can't afford to transport oil, coal, and bulk products, in other words. And I've been working, as many of you know, on making use of our water systems. And I think we succeeded very well with the budget that I have. And here, we're putting in the budget for two reasons. And it strikes me that some of us ought to know what you're going to do about that. If public works that I can come to you yet, but it will next. I think that's the only bill, by the way, that we weren't able to get a conference to the House, and I tried all I knew how. But one of the principals had to go back to the old party. He said he'd be back in early September. But you want to have that bill on your desk, Mr. President, within probably a week after Congress reconvened in September. And in that, we have a lot of items, same as we had in the past bill, that has to do with the development of water transportation, which I believe is a must in the country. And I'd like to know what you're supposed to do with that.
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, let me say that the work of the Appropriations Committee this year has been very heartening to us as these bills have come down more promptly, and I think we're way ahead in terms of that than we were last year, and I know that you're largely responsible for it, so I certainly appreciate that. I think in the fight against inflation,
certainly we want to stimulate the economy as currently is looking at. Certainly, we expect to get a jolt from the wage price freeze. And we certainly want to devise some method for taking advantage of that as the wage price freeze goes off. But we can't kid ourselves that you can just allow the budget to get completely out of hand, to grow and grow and grow, way beyond the revenue, and think that a free piece of board or any other device is going to deal with the inflationary problems. So as part of this program the president put forward, he said he's got to be seen as putting together as part of that. There is a set of measures to reduce what we now estimate to be the fiscal 1972 spending. Now, about half of what we need, not quite half of what we need for fiscal 72, in effect, recognizes the reality of where the congressional process is now standing on general revenue sharing, on various special revenue sharing proposals, and on H.R. 1 welfare reform. And the effective dates for these are adjusted to recognize that reality. In addition, as the President said, we expect he will propose to the Congress a 6-month postponement of the comparability pay raises due January 1st, 1972. Either House or Congress, by a majority vote, cannot set that the law. So the President will put that forward, and we need support for doing that.
May I say, I'd like to correct you. If only the President disagrees with what the board does, as Congress has to have it right.
The President disagrees with the board,
it went through without a 6% went through, without giving Congress the right to take care of it. And now the
Congress will have that chance.
Well, I thought by the time that stop giving the President that authority, but I think it only is full voice.
Well,
I think it was wrong then, and I think it's wrong now.
I think if there is a pay increase proposed, neither House nor Congress can accept that. In the case of an action by the President different from what the comparability would show, and this would be different, Congress can accept that, or to put it another way, this is a measure that needs congressional support. Now, this is not denying people a pay raise, but it is postponing the effective date, and thereby it gives us quite a substantial lift in our budget work. Now, beyond that, the President has directed a 5% reduction in the numbers of employees on the federal payroll. We think that this can be accomplished very largely through attrition. Attrition amounts to about 12,000 per month. And by just telling people they can't hire, as we have people leave, we think we can get down to that point. And then comes the 1st of January or an appropriate time, we'll simply say to the departments and agencies that we are going to hold back 5% of their estimated budget. Thereby achieve the savings. Now, we had to go beyond those types of measures into a number of other areas, and we expect to reduce the amount of money available to OEO for community action grants. We expect to reduce the flow of spending into the sewer and water grant area, into some of the housing areas. Public housing area, and in the renewal deal, and a variety of other ways to give about a $4.7 billion saving in fiscal 1972. Now, some of these measures do involve the impounding of funds by the OFA. I know that's controversial. I don't know any kind of way to get this budget into some sort of reasonable shape. Now, I would say beyond that, those things that fall to the OMB to to give the bad news. But beyond that, and a reason why it's important to be thinking about this problem now rather than a year from now is that obviously when we make the kind of revenue reductions that are proposed here, some are permanent reductions in revenue, the auto excise tax, the job development tax credit. Those are not scheduled. The personal income tax exemption is a move up of something that is scheduled. But if you make those permanent reductions, that amounts to probably $5-6 billion per year. Somehow or other, you have to find that in the budget. We'll have to find it in the fiscal 1973 budget. So it's going to be a rough budget year. We have told the cabinet departments that the gloves are off, and we're just going to have to find programs that not just cut everything, we're going to have to find something we just cut out.
Now, cutting it back on defense spending?
The defense budget is very much in process right now, and we have not included our thinking on that in this particular exercise for fiscal 72. That's under debate, and we want to leave that posture right there. But I think to go back to the general point here, that the president is putting forward a program that is deadly serious about creating more jobs, but also about doing something on inflation. And the wage price freeze will give us a jolt. Other things that can be done will help. But in the long run, we all know that unless we keep our fiscal house in order, we're not going to succeed. And so as part of this package, there is a very substantial cost reduction, which we think can be carried out with your support and help, of about $4.7 billion in fiscal 72. And I think that we will be looking very carefully at the startup of projects in fiscal 72 that cost very little in 72, but cost a lot in 73. Because if we get all these commitments out there, there's just no way to do the job that has to be done.
Well, for example, one area is that where the Congress appropriates money in excess of the budget requests. And you must remember that the budget requests did result in deficit. But where the Congress does make such appropriations in excess of those requests, those appropriations are not mandatory by the Congress. Those are candidates for withholding, frankly, to be put into place. We just have to do it. Now, I know that as far as the Congress is concerned, I think it's all right. The Congress has had a chance to vote for all these things, go home and brag about it. But on the other hand, in terms of responsibility, we can't take $5.5 billion in increase in appropriations and mandatory spending and just follow it. So we'll have that's the kind of thing we'll have to be compelled.
Well, Mr. President, we just appropriated $1 billion of more jobs than if there were more jobs available, it would be food stamps and things on the right side, but there's more employment. I think we have two sides to this effort. One is to do something about unemployment, build up the amount of employment. The tax changes and also some of the spending is designed to emphasize the things that are very direct on that. So as far as that public service job money is concerned, that bill, as you know, has been signed, and we're putting that money out as fast as we possibly can to create the jobs immediately along with these other measures. We hope will be strictly a temporary thing and will be needed as the private sector of the economy really picks up and goes. And so fast as that happens, we'll certainly want to cut down on this other effort.
I'd like to ask one more question. All of us are going to be bombarded with quick tech. I got a lot of them on Canadian things that work in the Google for quick tech. For example, in Canada, they're moving into the farm machinery because they're just like foreign countries are not mobile.
the average tractor now, the 60-18,000 in the combine. The cleaning things are selling for about, those things, about $3,000 a lift on our own. For some reason or other, they're able to undersell. They have a pretty good product, too. But my main question is, where can we go for an answer? Do somebody have a problem? Now, Canada, they're going to hold one of the real problems there, as you know.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Go ahead. As we were seeing questions about the wage price breaching and all aspects of that, there is an information center set up in the Office of Emergency Preparedness. And by tomorrow, as I understand it, Paul McGrath is working on this. We'll have 12 such centers set up in the regional headquarters around the country, and we expect to see that extended out to major metropolitan areas. Now that, I might say, is all being done with existing personnel. The OEP has about 300 people in it. They handle all disaster relief and that sort of thing. They're there. Those people are being used. And we're asking departments to assign people who are already employed to help them. There'll be no increase in personnel, but that, the OEP is the information center for that. And I would, I guess, John, questions about the import surcharge and anything to do with the monetary arrangements, the international arrangements would be referred to Treasury or in some of the Federal Reserve. And I don't know where you call the Secretary's office, or do you have an information?
I'm going to remember Congress.
Oh, you get an answer?
I'm sure, sir.
The OEP takes the lead, right, please. In case of the tax, like for example, does the investment tax credit apply to something in construction around the 1st of April was delivered later in the secondary degree, and his office is set up? Paul, if you
appropriations
go in, I've just got to tell you about the advisors. You're not running a general information agency, and certainly if you have any problems, down to the call.
The council, just in terms of you in particular, you know, leadership, called Paul because he is first sensitive and is aware of the whole ball of wax, and would be able to put their administrative or legislative man in touch with somebody for a specific answer in case he didn't want to answer there. But the council in the White House is a very good place to come. We'll all be glad to help.
Now, there's another question here, and that's on how the wage price freeze affects non-profit institutions such as colleges and universities that have to raise their tuition, particularly the private support and so forth.
We're going to get to that this afternoon in our first meeting.
Yeah, we probably
will not include tuition, but I don't think any, those are the main relations yet.
Not definitely. Those tuition increases in any case go into effect because they're a different composite in effect down payments, and therefore in effect transactions are also given the basis of the
people already committed. In other words, when the sales been made,
it has occurred to me that other nonprofit institutions could be adversely affected by this too.
Hospitals,
that kind of thing. I think we have to recognize that there are all sorts of inequities that will come about when you freeze something. One fellow got his wage increase just before the freeze, and another fellow was hoping to negotiate it just after, so there's an inequity. It's a 90-day freeze, and the only way to make it work and stick is just to make it a freeze.
So what is Secretary Colby, either George and who, I guess, just as I was all out to the president's actual freezing. Wages and prices, he wanted me to know that I'd be working against their best interests as well as the president. Because he had a pay increase that was supposed to go into effect on the 16th. And I said, well, we're sorry, we just won't form that day.
There are some labor unions that negotiate a pay increase individuals in respect. Some companies, for example, that have inequities in their price structures and feel that they have to have more and so forth and so on, or they change something. All these things are problems. People that are in the field of rent, you're going to hear an awful lot of airplanes, everybody knows how increasing rent is, and so on.
the profit money, so that, that this will not work. It simply cannot work with their number of exceptions. The moment you start making exceptions, everybody's going to be out. So it has to be frozen and frozen. Now, if we were talking about a permanent program, then you have to set up a huge machinery in order to handle exceptions. That's what, not what we're talking about. We're talking about a program for 90 days in order to lift the boil. And then after that period of time, and this is where the cost of living council is now having its considerations, we will be prepared to deal on a rifle shot basis with those future problems that may arise in this meeting, so that we can then do it on the basis of that way.
But the president is very important that you have all this work for it. History clearly shows that you're right. But we had wage inflation for most of World War II and the Korean War. They controlled, they gave the unusual, because the wage board, the bribe board, granted exceptions in every instance where there was an application. Now, if you don't hold the line on this thing, you'll find the same thing operating within a 90-day period.
So if I just want to be sure, is the freeze effective something, or is there any wage increases or price increases made within a period prior to Sunday which are caught in the freeze? Somewhere I read this morning that it rolled back 30 days, and 30 days was
no rollback. Price.
No rollback. Any man who had his salary raised Saturday gets it.
Yes.
Sure. Any man who set up a higher price on Saturday is entitled to use that. No rollback.
That's why we didn't let anybody know what we were doing in Camp David.
Well, I think it's right,
Saturday midnight,
the ceiling is the highest price during the 30-day period ending, August 30th, at which a significant volume of transactions occur. This is to avoid the possibility of a wild card transaction. That's the price.
Right. Well, wages, you wouldn't have that problem.
Because wages, let me ask this. Supposing your company had a loss leader advertising.
Over a 30-day period, so the loss leader would be in there. They don't run up this 30-day run for the weekend. Thursday night special time.
How do you allocate all these border taxes for
with the basic price of a commodity that is important?
You said it all.
In other words, that becomes a automatic
what we're basically trying to do is increase the cost of the imported commodity.
I know. Yeah, well,
let's say we are in the
system. In other words, like to take an automobile or a Toyota, it's going to cost 6.5% more.
But what if that's a finished product?
Well, what if it has to be a little bit, we should be bothered with here, probably. But where, let's say, the imported item is a, cost is a large portion of the ultimate selling price of the article. To what degree? In other words, it's not a finished product that you're importing. It's a component, but a very important component of the final product.
What are you going to do on the price of that particular item?
It has to be understood. I'm sure it's not just imported when it comes to the customer.
No, that's an expensive tax that it should.
No, well, if you have a finished product, you expect that, if you're bringing in a Toyota, you know what price is. So let's say you're bringing in some big component that goes into another. Is this part of a final product that is sold? I think of it.
Dr. Credit, I think
both of these are lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we're going to have all kinds of situations like this. As you say, we've got a tractor making all the way from the street product, like a bar automobile, to something where some imported item is a fairly small component of what turns into what's ultimately the total product.
Well, or if you had,
well, but I mean, we're going to have a and probably what you'll have, there are two ways to handle it. One is to have some cutoff point, and if the imported item is below a certain percentage of the total final product, then you disregard it. Or the alternative, you could have the surcharge that pertains to the imported component explicitly added to the ultimate price.
In other words, if you have a lot of the locking frame, 30% of the price, that would mean actually an increase rather than 10 of the,
we haven't made the decision, but we have it
very much in mind because there's there are items that range from 10% of the cost of foreign part of it. But it is two airplanes, present time,
the wing is built in one country, and another country, and the airplane in another, and that sort of thing has to be arranged up there.
But Paul and his group had a very suggested that there would be set up George and sort of a history of service. But where is the contact in terms of problems that are going to arise? We don't have an answer yet, or the problem has not been brought to anybody's attention. But where does that go? I would say that, generally speaking, as far as your concern in the general fields, to the Council of Economic Advice and so on.
Call.
Right. From there, you see, naturally, if it's a tax, when you get into a tax matter, you get into budget matters specifically.
I think we're going to see the ways in front of the way.
But if there's a technical problem, so I would put it in the council, because I think that's the best place to discuss it for it.
And then it goes here, of course.
To the general public, we have the OEC at 10 regional offices, Johnny, and that's where other members of Congress, but for the leadership, I think it would be well, because you could tell the others if you would just give Paul and Herb's time. Herb here?
He's not here.
Well, they have this thing all the time. We really put this
on our issues, and the regulations would be available.
Well, we're going to meet at 2 o'clock and develop a machine with Kennedy
within the next day.
Oh, yeah.
This week, we want to get it right while it's going on.
Right.
Charlie, I asked you a question about the 10% import surcharge. Will that be paid in the same manner at the same time that a duty will be paid?
Yes, yeah, this day or will.
Yes,
sir. It's always matter.
Yes, sir.
During this discussion, most of the talk has been good that has come to the automobile industry. As I understood you said in the beginning, that one out of every five jobs comes from the automobile. Now, the automobile people are getting a 7% excise tax ticket, 10% surcharge, and 10% to buy the equipment. Now, what other advantages are you giving to the automobile manufacturer?
Let's be just more precise as to who's getting the advantage. First, the automobile industry has committed to pass the 7.5% tax on to the 8 million people that will buy cars. So we're giving the advantage to those 8 million people, poor, rich, middle class, subsidized on food stamps who buy automobiles, including Cadillacs. Second, with regard to the the problem of the contestant thing. The important thing there is what they do with it. Now let's see what happens. So they have an investment credit and they go out and buy some machine tools. It means that they will then be more competitive in the world market. But when you speak about the automobile industry and what it gets, who gets it first? Whatever the automobile industry gets, we get 50% in taxes. We begin with that.
Second,
with regard to whatever the automobile industry gets, another 25-30% goes to labor for their wages. And third, whatever the automobile industry gets as a result of this, another percentage, a very good amount, of course, goes to perhaps 10 or 15 million stockholders. Now, what we're really talking about here is when we talk about a bonanza for industry, that's pure demagogy. And let's understand that what helps industry and creates jobs is what we all want. And the people around here, I think Wilbur and Mike and others have all recognized this in their statements. We're not trying to give up an answer to the industry. We're not, otherwise we wouldn't freeze prices. And we wouldn't have asked them, and we could only ask them, to freeze their dividends. What we're trying to do is to make American industry more competitive, create more jobs, and also get more income, frankly, which we do need in this government, so that we can do the big things that you mentioned a moment ago with regard to public works and the rest. Where do we get that tax money? You don't really get it. And we don't get that tax money out of people working for the government. We get that tax money out of the 5/6 of the GNP that is produced by American private enterprise, the point that you made over in your statement yesterday. So I really think that it isn't really fair now at all. I'm not going to play it and say, well, now, industry's going to get this, and this is going to get this, what the folks going to get? The folks are going to get that stuff, that excise tax, and the folks, and the government's going to get half of the profit, and the wage earners, because of these new jobs, are going to get it. And this, we think, is a sound solution.
I'm not complaining. I'm just trying to find out
for you, Arvin. I know.
That's clear. I had this to you later. And aside from these three that I mentioned, any other advantage to give them to the automobile?
No, the only better advantage is that they are, as far as they're concerned, they already have a very, very heavy wage increase, which they now have to swallow, because their prices are frozen. And they've agreed to freeze it for 3 months. So that's
the new models at the 71 price.
At the 71 price for 3 months. And it's another point. If that has been goose up the auto market, and I'd be very surprised.
You know, well,
the why they have to have that from yesterday.
I just want to suggest this to Senator Elder. I had the same question during the week yesterday. Since you guys the much of the newspaper thing. They said, if you look through this column, that this was a bill for the release of the automobile industry. Both that way said, I said, all right, let me just correct your plan a little bit. Really, what the president has proposed here is to allow the buyers of automobiles to enjoy the same free tax line as the buyers of any kind of household equipment, dryers, washing machines, ice box, all of which at one time had a tax, manufactured well. We took those taxes all, every one of them, in 1965. The house was manufactured overwhelming. We left the tax all on the purchaser of an automobile. Now we are trying to eliminate the discrimination that we left at that time in 1965 on the car purchase. I take all that tax. I just go out that tax will result today in you being able to buy a 71 car. If you want to know it, if the Congress goes back to the date suggested by the president, at about $200 less than you would have bought it on the 14th day of August, you get the benefit of it. The industry does. Now, the industry will get this benefit out of it if Mr. Roach is right. If they sell 400,000 cars, they're going to be making that much additional profit.
They only have to cover jobs, they only have to double it that much. And you've got all these manual jobs involved in. So it's not really anything that the automobile industry gets in the way of the national problem. There's nothing to that at all. I tried to straighten this newspaper, but I think I did.
That's one other point I should mention. When you mentioned, I think it's very important for us to know, first, the excise tax that passes on to the people to buy the car. Second, with regard to the import tax, the import surcharges concerned, that does not raise the price of American cars. Because that's why we had to raise tax rates. We freeze wages and prices. Okay. Now, frankly, I know the industry, American industry, would have loved to have a 10% surcharge on everything that's imported, and then they could raise their prices. But that's why you had to put the price freeze in. See, that's why I point out this is all part of a package. Price freeze, you have the surcharge without the price freeze, it would have enhanced the business. So that's why we had the.
Well, this 10% surcharge then would apply to any manufactured goods coming in. And the 10% the new machinery that applies to everybody.
Objective of speeding the transition from rapid and
increasing the price stability. That's our objective in that area. Now, as far as the Newport surcharge is concerned, that is, again, temporary. Once we work out some of our problems with other countries, I think I belong with hope, and I think this is your hope, Mr. President, that surcharge would be eliminated.
Sure, like, take that if they reach out to us again. That's a fundamental market. We've got a marketing position we didn't have before. Right, Arthur?
Exactly.
I would like to say, too, that with regard to this, to our conversation created, that this whole is, in my opinion, an excellent example of bipartisan cooperation between the Congress, which is under control of one party, and the administration, which is under control of the other. I would like to emphasize that as far as the program that we have presented is concerned, that I would be the first, and John Connolly would be the first to say, that many of its ingredients were recommended by members of the Congress, like Wilbur Mills and others, and we welcome that. And you're not going to have any of this, frankly, in 2 minutes, what I call 2 minutes, politics stuff of saying, well, who gets the credit? As far as we're concerned, it's just somewhat might like the time when, you know, Vandenberg worked with Harry Truman and so forth, the market last night. He had to work with them, and everybody got the credit. The Roosevelt period and the period of the market and the rest. At this time, we have the challenging piece, which is, in a way, even more difficult than the challenging war. War, of course, forces people to work together. Because here, particularly in war like World War II, which we should try to miss. Now we have a challenging piece. It is the enormous challenge. The challenge of a new competition that the United States has not had in, frankly, in this century. A new competition that we're prepared to meet. But in order to meet that competition, we've got to do some hard things. The administration has moved boldly and vigorously and promptly in the areas where we can work. However, our action will be blunted, and our action will be avoided, frankly, unless we can get cooperation. And I mean by that continued cooperation from the Congress. The Congress has cooperated, as I said, in suggesting some of these actions, and we welcome that. But now, on the tax front, in these three critical areas, and on the budget front, we need cooperation from the Congress. On the tax front, I could not emphasize too strongly about Russell. I couldn't agree more. You and I have talked about this. We do need some changes to these tax things, looking to the future, which I think we should take a look at when we've got the time. But right now, we believe that in these three areas, that there should be quick surgical action, or otherwise, the effects would be lost. The psychological effect will be, frankly, half as important, as the $200, where the Congress is determined to act at the worst. So we need that action. Second thing on the appropriations front, we of course will continue to try to work with the Congress in terms of trying to hold it down against the appropriation. I'd like to add one thing in that respect. There is another philosophy with regard to appropriations. I respect it and don't agree with it. But the philosophy here is that rather than, for example, having a regulated excise tax and a tax cut to individuals and a tax cut to basically your investment, credit, domestic industry, which will stir up private purchases by individuals and private investment by corporations, that the better answer is to take that money and put it directly into more government projects. The difficulty with that approach is, frankly, it just takes an awful long time. By the time the government projects that we talk about, public works projects, would be in place 2, 3, 4 years from now, if they have effect, then the economy is going to recover or go way down. There has to be a mix. There's some areas like the emergency public services thing where we think it's appropriate, particularly because that hits a group of employees
businesses, the new place and so forth, weren't likely to find much opportunity in the private employment market. Generally speaking, see, what we are doing is cutting the budget in those areas where the number of jobs produced by government spending is much less than the number of jobs that will be created by transferring that money to the tax reduction, which will be spent in the private area. It's a question of balance. And it doesn't mean that there are some cases from the share of the production action. In the areas we have selected on the budget cuts, what will happen on the tax reductions will have a much more powerful stimulator effect and create jobs faster now when we need it than to leave it in this public area where we can take it out. Now that's 3 yard plus.
And Mr. President, it's borne out by the fact that when once you start these programs through the federal spending process, it's almost impossible to stop them. I've often said that the only thing that ever stopped FDA was World War II.
What is the total revenue loss in terms of the refining
$6 billion,
and we pick it up through the budget cut on the import tax. And have a surplus, John, if everything works out. In other words, we don't have a Christmas tree hung on that tax bill. But we pick up a surplus of $500 million.
The budget cut, plus the amount of revenue we expect to get from the surcharge, import surcharge, gives us $500 million more than the tax reduction.
In other words, your border tax is going to take in 200 billion,
about 2 billion,
right? Less than 2 billion.
That's what it's going to
be. 2.1 billion.
Mr. President, you think you're going to lose 6 billion, are you? Do you take into account that you're going to have more income as a result of the increase?
We want to put the rosy thing on that. There was a way to figure that out. And Paul McCracken and Arthur Burns and Redskins said, well, look, you can really figure, John, how to get it, but you're going to get more income out of it, this and that, the other things, but you're not going to lose that much revenue. But this is putting it at its worst, bare bones, assuming no increase. My own view is that it will have the effect of looking at it 6 months from now, a very salutary effect in providing more income, more tax revenue. Suppose you sell more cars. Suppose more people are employed in business. Suppose General Motors makes more profits, etc. We could have that figure. We have not figured in here. We have not figured in increase.
But now you've cut back and down to 4.6 million on expenditures.
That's correct.
Now is that according to your budget or Congress's budget?
It's the budget that we currently have before us.
So that whatever money you account all congressional action that is taken today.
Well, that is on your budget.
Correct.
But anything we had, it would be in addition to this.
We have figured what the outlays are likely to be given the congressional action that has been taken.
On the private budget. But whatever we've added, you don't consider.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. You said no.
No.
4.6? What are you doing in your 4.6 cut?
We started
the president's budget, or you added to that what we added above the budget.
The starting point is what we see the president's outlays as actually being in view of the congressional actions as they affect the president's budget. And then we say, we have to reduce that. And so we reduce it by about $4.7 billion by these actions.
Well, now, I might understand that in your figure 4.6, every item added by the Congress over and above your budget is in that 4.6. And you're offended.
No, not at all.
I don't either.
We're
talking about different banks.
That's right.
They are talking.
Yeah.
Let me just say that what we have done now, we have taken our budget, and then we have taken everything the Congress has done, and you and your committee has done, and it's down here, and have estimated what the actual outlays will be. Then taking that, we have got 4.6 from that number. That's what it is.
Well, Mr. President, let's get at this one. George, you said the budget called for 2.9 million spending when you submitted. What is your estimate of what the spending will now be as a result of this action and of the action of the Congress on the president's budget? Have you got that figure?
Well, we have calculated, of course, what the congressional action is about to, and then we have carried through the president's budget and all his proposals, some of which haven't been acted upon, such as revenue sharing. And so then we get a higher number than that, in the vicinity of about $234 to $235 billion. There's also some reduction in,
but it would be $240 billion if you weren't reducing it by 4.7.
No, the mid-30s level is what we think is presently the case as a result of the congressional action on the president's budget. Now we have to reduce that. And that's what this 4.7
is taken off of that.
So you're back at 4.7 off of that number.
We're trying to get back to the 2.9.
Well, now, what about
Grover? There's still quite a bit. There's still considerable amount of appropriation action left.
What about programs that were acted upon by the Congress? But the 71 budget in which you have imposed the amount added by Congress was the cost of that amount.
Well, there have been lots of projects released as of the 1st of July, those congressional add-ons to prior budget. I think also that this business of the withheld funds has been in the source of more confusion than anything I can remember since I've been around here, and will take responsibility for it, the OMB, although we have lots of helpers. But a lot of that money is not properly described as withheld. The bulk of it is in the trust fund, the highway trust fund. Then we have lots of additional money that is essentially metered out as it becomes due under a contract. For example, the Navy lets a contract for a ship, and that ship takes 2 or 3 years to build. Well, the first bills come due, we release the money for that. The rest of the money that has been appropriated for that ship is held in reserve until a bill comes due. That's not stopping any project, but yet it is technically held in reserve. There are some, of course, where we have held back.
Those are long-term items, and that's been the case here before. But we have a lot of items that we've added in 71, well, not too many, but on public works, which I thought were necessary, and I can talk to you about it recently. I don't know what you've done about it. But I'm just wondering if those are going to be held back, and are they included in this 4.6 that you're talking about?
Well, there are some of the items included in the $4.7 million represent our intention to propose funds for projects for which money has been appropriated. And we do that in part in the interest of the 72 budget, and in part in the interest of budgets of subsequent years, because typically these money build up. Now that is a relatively small portion of the total 4.7 billion, but there is money of that kind in there for water and sewer areas, as an example, of China Bill, of course.
But generally speaking, let us understand though, this is a very, with this cut, still expansionary budget. There is still a very substantial deficit. So you see what I mean? They work on it, evidently, an awful lot of the projects, including some in Louisiana and so forth, are still not going to be in there and not going to be withheld.
You know, Mr. President, I've been nonpartisan on this.
I know, sir. I appreciate that.
I've devoted all of my time to practicability, protection, preservation of our two most important resources, land and water, and the park for us. Well, I think to not to spend money in that direction is a mistake.
I don't think you're going to find much of that in this window, so.
Well, if you do that,
you will handle it. Well, now, gentlemen, we can go on here. I'll get somebody ready. We're most grateful to the board and the statements that many of you made after he announced the program. I'm grateful for your coming up to this meeting. And we're grateful for this discussion that's been helpful to us in raising questions that we're going to have to answer. We very much need, in this case, on a priority basis, one action as soon as the Congress returns in September as the first priority, and second, to the extent that the leadership, to the extent you believe it, to the extent you should say it, if you could assure the country, now that I have spoken on the areas where I can act without going to Congress, you could assure the country, the Congress will take prompt action. I think this would be very important. I think if the doing gets around that well, if the country in the first rush that, you know, they assume everything's done, just like Wilbur said, the guy didn't go, I got on my cars and I cost $200 less. But now they'll find out, what about the Congress? And I think of nothing that would be more detrimental now to this spirit that is in the country that, well, we're going to move on this thing. And to say, well, it's going to fall into a partisan battle, and that the action that the Congress must take not be forthcoming. I'm not suggesting that the Congress should be a rubber stamp on something like that, but I can only reiterate that the three areas in which we've asked the Congress to act and the tax front have all been advocated by the Democratic leadership prior to this time. You advocating and you too have, Russell, you know, I think.
But President, out of the other forms, there's one thing that I want to mention to you as the Secretary of Treasury that may be necessary, and that's in order to get some of the duty out of it, that I have detected exists on the part of some folks outside of government about it being business direction. If we could develop, John, some way of enlarging the minimum standard deduction, which you can do with very little cost overall, you give a maximum amount of help to people in the very lowest level of income tax, who, if they get $2 additional through tax break, they're going to spend $2. Any dollar they get, they're going to spend. That isn't always true. All of us in galleries are personal attendants. If you look at something like that, just in case we get into an argument in the committee, I don't know whether we will or not, but you can do it. There's one step of it that goes into effect, I think, the first of the year. I don't think it's all in effect yet.
No, it isn't.
Not all enough. I think the rest of it goes in first of January. Which caught a lot of people off guard. You say you're taking some of these very low-income people off the road in part and reducing the tax burden of the rest of them. And I think all you would admit that any dollar that they get through tax reduction, they're going to spend. They're the ones we know are going to spend whatever they get through tax reduction.
If I recall, your standard deductions go up.
I go at a minimum standard, not the standard. The minimum standard that applies to the first four brackets, that's their $500 each,
right?
That's your man. We pull out $1,000.
We hold strongly on that in the tax reform bill.
Oh, yes. I don't want to go there. I don't think we need to, but if we need to do something more of it, in order to overcome this possible political argument, my son, that's where it ought to be done, in my opinion.
But let's say, for example, we're talking terms of the taxes relating to individuals that take place in January, and I believe that they're 4.7 billion.
I know what they're going to get. I know, but that's all
they're going to get. I know some of it's already shot.
It's already all the
money. I know, but they only got that. And then you got a PR problem here as much as anything else, and they haven't got it.
That's the only reason why it's important to have a relationship if necessary. Dear Secretary, I don't know what it is or not.
Anybody else have a?
Mr. President, I understand from what the public press say that Wilbur is going to start coding areas on the 8th of September.
I was going to ask Mike whether that's announced to you, I guess. I haven't seen a paper this morning that Frank Yard is okay with this emergency.
I read the paper, heard the radio, maybe both.
Well, that's all for us.
And I'll be glad to follow Russell's guidance as to what's been asking me to do following the.
Well, I assume that what you want to do is just send a bill over and lay aside each or one move in the direction of what you type. But I said, no, but you don't want to say. So you're willing to do that? Well, that's just that, I mean, that's what you're doing. I can't think of my business as the way Wilbur's going to be there. He's got a close rule over there, which sometimes saves the country from the soft bodies that beat up on the close rule. Well, frankly, I've done that close rule of the house, so it's safe the whole evening. You weren't right this time, Mr. President. I fell asleep working on tax reduction. We got carried away and if we had had a quick lunch, we would have repealed a whole bunch of government. I would think that that would really be supposed to go along with that, and when we send it over, that we lay aside whatever we're working on and take this up and put it all out there. And frankly, Wilbur, in line with what the president's saying, to the extent that that comes over to the individual packages issued, I think they hold it to just that on the floor. You know, if you've got a bill that just relates to it to exercise taxes, I'm prepared to vote for it right now, but assuming that if we put out the bill and said, all right, it's 7% exercise tax, I think that we would probably get an agreement to limit the amendments to something to remain as we did, and we limited this step to exercise taxes. Which expedites the procedure when we can do that, and keep it from being in getting off on everything under the air and under the sun, you might say, that in something that matters. If we can move in that fashion, I would think that we ought to be able to move as fast. Usually we do move faster than the House moves on these bills, and so,
how long was your hearing class?
If I may interrupt Russell on this point, I told him yesterday, get Mr. John yesterday, the day before, to announce the hearing again on the 8th, that's on a Wednesday, I believe. If we can get through with all of the coming witnesses on the 8th and 9th, and then have the week of the 13th, Monday the 13th, for the public witnesses, and I think we voted for that. We could have a bill out, I would think, John, the next year, can pass through the House of the next year, 2020. These are federal issues that you have to get on there. Now, Russell, this bill would contain these three things. It would be the investment tax credit, or job, that would agree with the law, as you want. The state reviews, the central federal authorities, and the moving forward of the $50 increase in personal sanctions from January 1, 1973 to January 1, 1972. Plus there's a little possibility, that's the only possibility I see, and that would be very...
You have not put an 11-month bill?
Oh, yes.
You can get it out, I think, by the 29th.
I would say so.
Well, we understand that revenue sharing will be set aside for the rest of the session.
Oh, no, it's still on there, Bobby.
No, but I'm talking about...
Here. it's utterly impossible for the Brooklyn ATW to get it into operation at this late date by the 1st of July '72. They just can't do it. Now, if we passed it earlier this year, they could have.
Well, our effective date, though, on the back part was 73.
No, January 1, '73, with respect to the working for July.
You've got to understand that there's no power in a Senate committee chairman to give you any assurance there in that bill. It's that Senate voting more money to 100 amendments or 200 standing out there. And that's just one of the things that we have to be prepared for in the Senate. Anybody that's got something, he's been sitting there with all year waiting for a bill that's going to go to press test. It's like the thing we're here to hear, and that's something. So that there's no guarantee that the commission can that bill comes out there. That we can do what the House does, you want to vote rules.
It's going to take very strong leadership in this case to run the part of everybody concerned, and we'll cooperate with you.
Well, Mr. President, may I suggest that if the work of the oncoming Congress that is to come back to September 8th, it relegates the program you're now talking about and set aside your revenue carriage until next year, and let us finish the appropriation bill and then get through with it by bringing it out over 15 and go back home. We can do that if you get that assurance and work towards that end. I'm sure we can get out of October 15 and get your program on September. But if we start with the revenue carriage and other things, we may be down to December. God knows we shouldn't do that. And if so far the appropriations are concerned, is anybody in the House here? George, hang on. We've been ready to act on defense, on District of Columbia. In fact, all of the appropriation bills, both 2 months ago.
Let me be very clear. We want revenue sharing, and we want the HR work, but we recognize the reality that if even frankly you didn't have this, if you lost time before you're going to get it for the end of the year. But my point is, whatever we want, and except of course for appropriations, the highest priority is this tax issue. That should come number one before anything else. You set aside everything else. I think you should set aside everything else.
Oh, there it was. There it was.
Well, it's not as well. But I hope you can pass it before December.
We've got time to run over the 15th, and we can be told that we can tell the Congress that after we pass the appropriation bills in this program, we will hold. But otherwise, you want to be here until December. Mark what I'm saying.
Maybe we can get together and let's talk a little bit.
what have been set together this morning, the presentation, and still the spending of the program, and give it up, and we kind of want to get you further more. Do up with this job, you go ahead and do something in the country, you start it now, don't get it down. Not a Republican, not a Democrat, but let's get it done in the country, and I think we're, we can do it, and I think the Congress will be fine.
Well, credit's for everybody, let me say, as I've tried to point out, because if it works, which it's going to, we've all done.
And Mr. President, John has, I hope that after this 90-day period's over, you'll have some legislation that we can put on the books that'll help stabilize the economy, which you got sent, and that's why you're discussing for 90 days now, because that's something you said, I know, and it's just,
that's a good idea.
But I think they won't correct it, you know, that we all know that. They just say, in their speech, that it gives size and relevance to the land. It's one thing that,
thank you.
Mark Sherman as well.